Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. Wildcard round is all done for the boys. So we're officially in finals time because wildcard isn't technically finals, although it pretty much is. But all final four for Country and Metro are set, plus some representative girls action in the under 17s that we're going to run through today. But we'll touch on the boys' wildcard because we saw every single game this weekend. And I went down to Ballarat on Saturday. You were at Bundoora on Sunday and I watched the Tassie game on the Sunday. So a lot to unpack. I actually don't know. You can pick where we start.
Great way to start is the conditions, the players that really mastered the conditions, because I think the theme across local footy, across pathway footy on the weekend was it was windy, it was blowing a gale, it was raining down in Tassie, it was really, really hard to play footy in those conditions, and I think we learn a lot in those conditions. In windy conditions, you've got the decision makers, the ones that actually try and open up the other end of the ground, the other side of the ground where it can be tough to get the ball. And in the wet, you've obviously got the really clean players. But Nathan, I know you watching on stream were very big on the game of Harry Charlson from the GWV Rebels, so I'll let you kick us off.
Yeah, out of the four games I watched, it'd have to have been the number one in terms of conditions, and I thought it was really bad on Saturday in Ballarat. What I saw in Tassie looked worse because I feel like Vic just had the wind over the weekend. Tassie had the rain as well, and this was full bucket in like the whole game, so it was 36-34, which is that's such a low score in
you wouldn't battle. Win too many finals kicking four goals.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, but his cleanliness was unreal. It just felt like the ball was dry the whole time, and the way he was able to move out of the defensive 50 as well made it so much more impact for the way he moved the ball forward. And at times, especially on the outside, it felt like the Rebels were able to generate a lot more movement going inside 50 off the back of his work and his work rate to move it forward. Every pickup was clean. He just seemed to always seize the moment so well, and it was one of the best wet weather performances I've seen in quite a long time.
Yeah, very well summed up. I think from my point of view, Alex Tarrou was one who really impressed. His first quarter for Gippsland, when Gippsland were kicking against the wind, was absolutely phenomenal down back. He took four intercept marks, a couple of really big tackles as well, and reading the ball in flight when a lot of the players led and then it went over their heads because the wind forced that to happen. He was one who was able to actually seize up the conditions and then play to them really well. He was at the end that the wind was going every quarter, so he was thrown forward when Gippsland was going forward and he was in defence when Gippsland was going the other way. And I thought the way he played the conditions was really good. Tom Evans for Bendigo was really good as well. I really liked his contested work. Same can be said of Jesse Craven from Gippsland. He was a big reason behind the win. He really cracked in, and his attitude on a really ugly day for footy was a really influential part of the result. And Willem Bennett, a bottom major from Bendigo, I really liked the way he read the ball as well, took some intercept marks. We both watched Nash King. I thought he played a pretty good game in those conditions. Nathan, they're probably suited to his in and under style of play.
Yeah, it certainly was. A lot of the ball was pretty back and forth in that Oakley quarter game. Momentum was there, but each team capitalised really with the win. But his offensive running patterns, I thought, stood up. The way he was able to generate it, get the ball out of the stoppage and move it forward, his vision inside 50 was quite neat. So I think it was a good way it was a good round out to his game, a good momentum to take into a Sandy game as well. I just want to quickly touch back on some others from the Tassie GWV game, more just Lenny Douglas really in terms of a Tassie perspective, who I thought played the conditions really well. He kicked two goals in the end, but both really similar with his
three goals.
But two goals in particular, pressure acts inside 50, adapting to that wet weather and understanding he doesn't need to mark it, above his head. He's just got to get it to ground and work around there. So I thought his performance on Sunday was quite good.
Well, Nathan, you talked about Harry Charlson being the standout player you saw on the weekend. I think Jesse Dottoli wouldn't be too far behind him. Tell us about how you've seen his last few games. You've seen quite a bit of him, it feels like, over the last month or so, and he's really bolting up draft boards.
Yeah, I actually thought his game the week before was better, but like this was such a good backup. Like it was almost the exact same thing. And I think because Northern in the end kind of ran over him comfortably, it didn't feel like that. It just didn't feel as good as last week because they were coming back last week compared to this week. But his offensive running patterns are just insane. He was presenting really well. He was also crumbing really well, which I thought was an extra element that probably wasn't there as much last week, just his ability to read the drop of the ball and find his way onto an easy goal, really. Finding goals in easier ways than I feel like he does it the hard way, but that's just he does it in does it a lot more skilled than others, but his work rate was there. Out of the stoppage, he was really clean and, yeah, he was just selling candy at times, feeling really crafty watching him. And, yeah, I guess he was that main man for Northern and really did cause that big upset.
I think it's really important to note as well, no Zach Johnston from a Northern perspective. We'll talk about that in a second in a bit more detail. But the incumbency that would have come on Jesse Dettoli to have a strong performance given the way that team is structured so much around Zach Johnston and Jesse Dettoli, you take one of them out, that's a key pillar. So for Jesse Dettoli to stand up in that game was really big. I've been upfront in saying that I think he's had a really good season. He's probably grown into it well. You could say that you want to have a good game every week and you're top age year, but he's really built into it, had a pretty good championships, and now he's showing his polish as well. But a couple of big upsets on the weekend, and Northern is one of them, obviously getting the win over Eastern. Probably expected Eastern to get the win, and Gympie was certainly the less talented team on paper against Murray. 7 of the 9 players who played in the national championships between Gympie and Murray that were on field on Sunday played for Murray. Only 2 played for Gympie, but Gympie were too strong in the end. I'll ask you first, Nathan, how were Northern than able to get it done? Then I'll speak a little bit more about the power.
It was a massive upset, and I think it really did speak to Eastern's kind of drop in form in the back end of the year. And I know they beat them the week before, but even that game felt really off with intensity, that they got up by about 45 points and then just kind of put the cue in the rack and let Northern come back, and then just had a good last 10 minutes to get them home. But this one was a bit different, where Northern set the tone pretty early. If I check the scores, yeah, I mean, Northern got out to a 3-goal lead at quarter time, and that was with the wind. And even against the wind in the second quarter, it was 3-2 Eastern's way. So they didn't really do a lot when they had the wind Eastern, which I think was a big difference in the end. And I don't really feel like anyone stood up for Eastern and took it by the scruff of the neck. And I know Josh Smiley's stats suggest he was best on ground. He probably was, but I still didn't think it was one of his best performances. It was probably just one of his most consistent across 4 quarters, where he built into it quite nicely and had the 2 goals for them. But yeah, I just don't think anyone was able to stand up for Eastern. Also, you had the likes of Taj Logan, the captain for Northern, who I thought played a really good role in filling that gap for Zach Johnson. Gab Stumpf again provided really good output, along with Tom Sims with his overhead marking. Just probably wasn't able to hit the scoreboard as much. And Nick Canavan down back, I thought, was pretty solid as well.
Yeah, very well summed up. For the game between Gympie and Murray, I thought what was really telling was the way Gippy's midfield was willing to just adhere to what they needed to do and play their roles, and I guess compensate for the fact that they didn't have the class of Xavier Lindsay. And Max Stobie went off with a head knock midway through the match as well. So that's 2 of their 3 best on bowlers that they were without for most of the game. But their next best really stood up. So Jesse Craven, I've talked about him. He really stood up. You also had Brody Atkins, a bottom ager, whose clearance work was really good throughout the day. And I think Max Donoghue as well got to lots of contests. So without them having those really top-end draftable players, I thought what they were able to do was make it a game where it was typically sort of country-hardened footy with the wind and that sort of thing, and they were able to use that to their advantage. And it was really, really pleasing to see. They've also got a really strong backline who, against the wind, were able to stand up. I think against the wind, Murray were only scored 1 goal all day, and that was a result of Harry Canning winning his 1-on-1. Ones, Jai Esler, Harry Butcher were all really good as well, and it was a really strong performance. A shout out also has to go in this game to Tom Matthews, because as good as what Gippsland was, they led by just 1 point with 90 seconds to go, and it felt like at some point they're going to be able to kick a couple of goals and kick away with the wind. They were never able to do that. It took a Tom Matthews mark in the goal square, a contested mark from a 170-centimetre small forward to basically ice the game for them. So yeah, a shout out to him. And yeah, Gympie progressed. They seem to always have a way of building into the season and winning a final or two. So we'll see if that'll continue this week against the Dandenong Stingrays. But our next topic, a couple of players who probably stood up and had arguably their best games of their respective seasons on the weekend. Certainly Reyak Andrew did, but I'll let you first talk about Nathaniel Sulzberger. 29 disposals and 3 goals. He came into the season as one that Sandy were really promoting as having a strong preseason.
Yeah.
Perhaps has been a little bit below what we would have expected throughout the season, I think it's fair to say, but really delivered on the weekend.
Yeah, he certainly did. And I guess that's I guess that's what happens when you're around such a talented team. It is hard to really break through like that sometimes, and that's one of the talking points about the tag later, and that's what Levi Ashcroft had to deal with against Western. But he was so productive across those four quarters, really stood up when it felt like no one from Sandy was able to provide a lot of offensive output. It just seemed like they were waiting for moments to happen. But Western tactically, they knew the matchups they wanted to take down, and they did it really well in the first quarter before Sandy were able to break out a little. But he was just using the footy really well in transition. That run and carry, that a little bit of explosiveness that we're not as used to. We haven't seen as much, but it felt like that really came to the fore in this game. His hands inside 50 were really slick and clean and got opportunities in front of goal. Contested marking as well was there, consistent tackle pressure, and it ended up, I think it was three goals
for the
day. 3 goals and 29 touches. So he was that scoreboard threat as well. And I think he was really... a clear best on ground. I mean, Levi Ashcroft came into it. Murphy Reid was, you know, the usual, but even both of them kind of had to really work themselves into it. Just took the responsibility himself, which I really liked, and it felt like he was, you know, the main character in the sense in that game where he was just that main midfielder who was willing to get him over the line. So I was really impressed. I think it does his chances quite good, that game. That was, if you want that, you know, React Andrew performances you're going to talk about, that's that game you're looking at right there.
Well, I tell you what, not only does it do his chances no harm, but what it does is it probably sends a bit of a shiver down the spine of some of Sandy's opponents to come, because if they've got Murphy Reid and Levi Ashcroft and you've got Nathaniel Sulzberger in form as well, you're going to be very hard to beat. But React Andrew, he's played on Job Shanahan twice this year prior to the weekend, and he got beaten comfortably both times. There's no denying that. He kicked 4 goals on him, Job Shanahan, at the National Championships. Yeah. And then when Dandenong played Bendigo at Shepley Oval earlier in the year, he kicked 5 goals too and, beat him one-on-one comfortably. But on the weekend, React Andrew was again given the same matchup, given the opportunity to respond, and he did just that. He was best on ground, and he was best on ground comfortably. He won his one-on-ones. He locked down Job Shanahan. He didn't give Job Shanahan the ability to get separation on the lead, and Job Shanahan never really looked likely at ground level either. He probably had a little 10-minute period in the second quarter where he took a couple of marks, but at no point did it feel like he was going to be a scoreboard threat. He had to really work his opponent up and down the ground to get those marks. So a really impressive performance from React Andrew, and as well as I've seen him play since the corresponding fixture last year. He played really well in wildcard round last year. Last year it was his intercept marking and athleticism that really was noticeable, and we have seen that throughout the season, that athleticism, that willingness to fly, and he's got the ability to jump at the ball. But to actually lock someone down and be able to turn the tide on someone who's had his measure all year, I thought it was really promising, and we'll see if he gets the job on possibly Alex Tarrou this week if Alex Tarrou plays forward. I know that was a touted matchup last week, but then Alex Tarrou didn't end up playing forward. But he's one that I'll be keen to watch in the next couple of games or so, because he's one that probably needs a really strong game. He's obviously the brother of Gold Coast's Mac Andrew, and those comparisons have come thick and fast throughout his time in the talent pathway system. But the next one we'll move on to, you sort of alluded to it before, is the tag. And you're not allowed to strictly tag in the talent league, but there were players that ran with some of the better players in the league. Jagger Smith was shut down by Felix Knipe, and Levi Ashcroft had to deal with Noah Asiak from the Western Jets. You watched both of their games up close. Take it away.
That was tagging. That was blatant tagging. You can't dance around that. That was as blatant tagging as it gets. But I get it. That was probably the decision they had to go with. They're two players that are in great form, especially Jagger. But the problem is they get their way eventually. There's only so long you can wear him down for. I think it worked well with Levi because that is one of his weaknesses. He lets people get in his head quite quickly, and which is something he does have to kind of build on, I think, you know, work on when he gets to the AFL level. Yeah. He does tend to get a little bit too angry sometimes. Doesn't retaliate and throw, just, you know, mentally you can tell he gets a bit frustrated sometimes. Jagger, not so much. I just think his performance was, you know, limited because of that tag, but you know, his teammates started getting into him, which we'll talk about Noah Uzay later, and he was one that did switch, you know, change the tide a little bit, and matchups change, and it really let Jagger express himself. I'm guessing you're pretty against it. I understand it in finals. I can actually kind of live with it to an extent because, you just want to win a premiership. I feel like for the most part, you've had your majority of the time to do your best football. So
yeah, I like it. I don't mind. I don't have an issue with it in finals. I like you said, in finals, you want to be winning as many games as possible because you want to be playing as many games as possible. The more games that a team can get in front of recruiters, it gives their prospects more chances to shine. So you want to be doing everything you can to win, probably more so than in the home and away season where you're sort of throwing magnets around a little bit more and that sort of thing. So I don't mind it. And, yeah, it shows something a little bit different. Like Felix Knipe is one we are going to watch next season. He's had really strong schoolboy form and he played really well in that 17 showcase. So we are going to see his offensive attributes to see he can do something defensively is really, really positive. I guess the talking point that I guess ties into this is Finn O'Sullivan, and he was missing again on the weekend due to a hip flexor injury. Now, we talked about Jagger Smith and Levi Ashcroft and how they were able to break the tag, and we're constantly in dialogue about where they're sitting this year. The dialogue has been more limited with Finn O'Sullivan as a result of these injuries. I'll let you kick off how you see his injuries in relation to the pick one talks. Can he still go pick one despite the injuries, which are ultimately not soft tissue? They're just contact injuries that continue to build up, but we just haven't seen him much this year.
Well, I think no now because, well, like you said, if they're contact injuries, well, it's only going to get worse, won't it? You're going to go against bigger bodies.
I don't know. To me, I'd prefer it to be contact injuries than soft tissue because soft tissue is something that's going to plague you in the long term, clearly.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess if you had to draft him off what he's done, I mean, even his country was really average. So if I were to make that statement, you'd be like, well, no, even his country was pretty average. So you're really taking the first – did he even play at the start of the year, now that I think back?
He did. Yeah, he did. Played a couple of games.
He's played against Sandy, which, you know, that was a draftable game. Not that he's in that position where he needs to have one, but I don't know. I'd say no. I think you're taking a clear risk. I don't know if it's just a matter of we need to be really careful not to long-term injure him at the back of this year.
Yeah, and they have been cautious. Like Oakley's been up front that they've been taking the cautious approach with him. But
yeah. My answer is no. I don't think you can anymore. There's just something a bit, I don't know, iffy in the air just about it. That's, I don't know.
Just as a result of the injuries.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what it's done is, I'm not willing to say yes or no, probably clearly at this point, but I think what the injuries have done is they've made what should have been a safe pick at number one a very, very dangerous pick. Yeah. So I think coming into the season, Finn O'Sullivan was the safe pick because he had no weaknesses. That was how he was branded coming into the season. If he produced what we expected him to produce this season, we would have been talking about him as that player that has a little bit of everything. You know, he doesn't necessarily have the size or the scope of someone like a Josh Smiley, but his ability to turn a game in 10 minutes, we saw it against Sandy. And I think that Sandy performance was really important. And I think his VFL game for Richmond was also instrumental to show that he does have the ability to do it and to remind everyone that he can do it. And it wasn't just strong form as a bottom major, but all of those attributes still exist. And when he does get a clear run at it, his upside is as high as anyone's in the draft. So I think he's still there or thereabouts. I think had Josh Smiley had an outstanding season, he wouldn't go pick one because Josh Smiley would go pick one as a result of just those attributes being powerful and big. Because there are now question marks over Josh Smiley and Jagger Smith as well being the size that he is, and obviously Harvey Langford's always going to have the speed question marks, I think everyone now has question marks, and that's what's created this intrigue. So that's probably how I read the situation. It's not a very linear answer. It's not a yes or no. That's a lot of greys, what ifs and buts. But I'd still lean towards Jagger as being a safer pick.
I don't disagree with what you say there. It's very fair points. I'm just going off, I don't know, maybe I'm just frustrated because he's such a good talent. It's frustrating not seeing him being able to produce that. But move on now and quickly wrap up these last three ones. But two more I just want to quickly run from these Oakley topic and then one on James Barrett. But number one pick next year, just a really quick conversation of how good it's looking. Louis Emmett was superb on the weekend for Oakley. His pressure acts around the ground. He's just class with the ball in hand. When he was in the ruck, so instrumental to the way Oakley moved it forward, where he's playing almost like a midfielder. It was it was that exciting to watch. And Cooper Duff Tytler, on the other hand, was so clean in transition, and his presence inside 50 was Calder for Calder was terrific. If I had to ask you the question of who's getting number one next year right now, who would you have?
Again, anytime we talk about Cooper Duff Tyler, there just has to be that preface. Well, if he if he chooses footy, he's still got the basketball pathway if he wants it. I'd probably say Cooper Duff Tytler. The way I'd read it at this point, though, and it's probably more of a gut feel and opinion rather than anything informed, is that it will be the one that is better able to project as a key forward, because I feel like having a really highly regarded ruck is going out of vogue a little bit, and you're preferring to have a workman-like ruck or someone that's a mature-aged recruit. If you're going to take someone that's key position, you're more likely to take them as a forward, like we saw the GWS Giants with Aaron Cadman a couple of years ago. So my early answer would be Cooper Duff Tytler, because I've seen him play better forward than what I have Louis Emmett. Part of that's down to opportunity, because obviously Oakley have got some other key forwards that they've played there. Noah Uzay, 10 disposals on the weekend, which is unbelievable, and he had 4 disposals, I think, the previous week, and it feels like he impacts the game a lot more than that. He always has lots of tackles as well. Now, we don't want to put it all down to stats, because there's so much more to footy than that, but he's a player whose touches really matter. He's so hard at it. He's so strong in the contest, and when he's in the midfield, it feels like he really imposes himself, and he gets the momentum going his team's way. So he's a player I really like. I'm just interested in what the next step is for him. A Melbourne father-son prospect, obviously the son of Richmond coach Adam Uzay, who was a stalwart for Melbourne for a long period of time in the early 2000s. For me, he needs a true weapon. He needs something that when he gets the ball in his hand, you think of and you really associate with him. Yes, he's strong and he's got a little bit of an athletic base, but is he skillful enough? And are we seeing it enough when he's only touching it 10 or 12 times per game, as much as he is impacting him when he is touching it?
So it's an odd one to talk about. If he's one that could almost play a tagging role at the next level.
That's exactly I think, because he's done it on Josh Smiley a little bit.
And that's what I gathered from, you know, watching him again on the weekend, is that he comes into those centre stoppages. He takes out one or two Calder players, Jagger gets that free space. So he's not necessarily looking to even get his hands on the footy. It's just the other things he does tactically.
He's aggressive.
It's an odd one. I don't know. I feel like it's one we'll probably go into a little more closer to the draft time. He's obviously being father-son, I think, helps his case incredibly, because he's just got that, not one foot in the door, but obviously he's got that connection already with the club. So I just wonder if the D's would look for someone like that has that type of skill set. I think he's unique in that sense, though. Not many players can have really showcase that type of role this year, of a real lockdown where it's not really about getting the footy, it's about those pressure acts and the defensive things you do. So
one who has Darby Wilson in the midfield for Murray, the last 3 games watching him, he's been really good in that sense.
That he's an interesting one to watch. I'll be excited to see what he does this week, and if Oakley get further as well, what type of role he does play. But I'll let you touch on James Barrett.
One second before I do, in a word, would you prefer to see him, if he doesn't get drafted next season, go and play a season of VFL, or half a season try and get mid-season, or come back as a 19-year-old for Oakley?
VFL. I think if it's a role where you can directly translate it to whatever level of footy you're at. I don't know. Come back to Oakley. He can match it physicality-wise. It's not like he's proven anything coming back.
I'd probably sit with you on that one as well. I'd like to see him play VFL. We've seen him play a little bit of VFL this year, actually, for Casey Reddy. Just quickly on James Barrett. We've talked about him a lot in the last month or so. Unbelievable first quarter on Harvey Langford. He was sent into the midfield for the first time this season. I think Bendigo didn't really think they had a midfielder to go with Dandenong's guns in Harvey Langford and Cooper Hines. They're two big-bodied midfielders, so they sent James Barrett into there. And in the first quarter, he kicked 2 goals, took a couple of contested marks, 4 clearances and 4 score involvements, and it was a statement start, and it gave Bendigo a fighting chance at quarter time and at half time with the wind as well. Unfortunately, they had to take him out of the midfield to sort of strengthen other parts of the ground given the conditions, but I think what he's shown in the last couple of weeks is that he can lock down. He's been the interceptor all year, locked down Josh Murphy last week, and then did a real job on Harvey Langford, who did still kick a goal in that first quarter, mind you, but was significantly down on impact, thanks to James Barrett not letting him run unimpeded towards the footy. But what we'll do now is we're going to do a little bit of a segment over the next few weeks where, as these players' campaigns come to a close, we will sum them up and synopsize their season essentially in a sentence. So we'll start with the Western Jets boys, and I'll start with Luca Grego. And what I'll say about him is I think he's proven that he can slot into an AFL system as a role player, and the fruits of his professionalism are shining through with how quickly he's developed throughout his time in the talent pathway.
Maybe I'll just say agree or disagree in this case. I got a few that I'll give a sentence to, but I don't want to repeat. I'll say agree.
Yep. Lucas Impey, I think he's one who never played a statement game, but he did threaten to throughout the season, and he did show AFL attributes sporadically.
Agree.
Yep. Agree. Eastern boys now, yep. And we're just going for the players that have been discussed in draft conversation. So Josh Smiley, I think, has been the ultimate tease this year, and he is the player that a lot of people wanted to label as the number one pick, but underperformed at the national championships. That will always be a stain on his 2024, as well as he has played for Eastern.
A tease is hard because he did show glimpses. I don't think he's teased a consistent year rather than teasing his full potential. Yep. I think we know his full potential. He just didn't do it across the full year.
Yep. No, well summed up. Christian Moraes, I think, in some games, AFL Academy and Box Hill, struggled against senior bodies, but his scoreboard impact, speed and power has maintained his first round status.
Hasn't gone backwards. I think others have gone forward.
Yep. Cody Anderson obviously had the untimely injury, which robbed recruiters of the opportunity to see him. Obviously one of the most polarising players in the draft at the national champs, which he would have entered in white hot form. So a real shame is how we reflect on his year.
Top 50 in form for the year. I'm still undecided.
And I think that's how undecided. So many people feel because we didn't get to see that national championships. It's a real shame. Going down to Tasmania, Ollie Dean, he showed scope in a year of slow development for him.
Still very raw. Still think there's a... Definitely. Even on the weekend, I just didn't get that real... there's no emphasis in his game still, and I think that still needs to be built on, but he's not out of the question. I think it's just still very raw.
Yep. I'd agree with that. Ollie Dipoli, Q-Bank, his season really peaked at troughed, so he missed the summer Allies squad. Then he played a key role throughout the champs and showcased his versatility, but then missed a combine invite altogether, which I think was a little bit of a travesty on how well he played all year. I really liked his form. Still question marks over whether he can translate it to the next level.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Be interesting if he kind of takes on a Jordy Payne role if he doesn't get picked up this year in that. He's got that excitement factor, but I'd agree with what you said there.
Lenny Douglas has dangerous moments, but probably floats in and out of games and was let down by his championships.
Agree.
Yep. The Bendigo boys, Toby Trevaglia, he took every opportunity and his output never wavered.
Oh, he's elite. He's just been a gun all year.
Yep. Absolutely. Joe Shanahan built into the year beautifully to establish himself as one of the most talked about tools.
I think he showed every different skill set he needed to show for a tall forward. I think he's definitely that number one tall forward without question.
Yep, certainly. James Barrett has proven invaluable at both ends this season, which has been underpinned by his aggression and his marking.
Yeah, I'd agree. I do now wish in hindsight I'd seen more of his footy because I can't see him anymore. You watch a lot more Bendigo than I have, and I'll take your word for it. I guess the performances do speak for themselves.
Archer Day Wicks, I think he started the year as an X-factor and he finished it as a complete player. He hurts with his touches and he's willing to put his head over the footy now, which I don't think I could say as confidently as at the start of the year.
Yeah, I agree.
Jack Whitlock justified the preseason hype with his form and his attributes throughout the year.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Did quite a lot, given I still think they're quite raw in their development.
Yep, Matt Whitlock, like you said, versatile and raw, but he wasn't afraid to take tested mark and showed that versatility as well.
Agreed.
Joe Berry was a regular goal scorer all year, which catapulted him into first round draft calculations. He's a prototypical small forward.
I think he's more than that because his work rate shows you can almost put him further up the ground without risk of his height or anything like that. So I think he's, I'd agree with that extra element.
Yep, well summed up. And Josh Murphy, he's powerful one-on-one, but I still have some lingering questions given his size and skills don't quite align.
Yeah, it's harsh, but it's probably true. Yeah, agree.
Yep. So that's the first batch. So there'll be four more teams that'll get eliminated this weekend. So we'll do that with the teams as they get eliminated. Then there'll be a couple more in each of the following weeks. But like you said, there was some girls' footy.
I've got tips first.
Oh, tips.
We'll go tips.
Yep.
So quarterfinals, they're all at Port Melbourne, and we'll watch all these games. Sandy and Calder.
I think Sandy win this. I think they're just going to have a little bit too much strength in the midfield. Losing Damon Hollow to concussion hurts. He was knocked out by Waylon Davey Motlop. It was a bump, and Waylon Davey Motlop has been suspended for four matches.
Seems harsh. It was a four-match bump. Seeing it right in front of me wasn't great. I'll say Sandy as well. I don't really think Calder will get close. I think they're competitive, but I mean, Oakley just steamrolled them after a certain point. Northern and Oakley.
Yeah, and I think Northern, in a similar boat to Calder, they'll lack the star power against Oakley, although Oakley, as well as missing Waylon Davey Motlop, who is so reliable up forward as a goal scorer, they're also missing Zane Cochran in the midfield through a one-match suspension for striking. But I still think Oakley will be too strong.
So do I. So the first top metro seed will play the second country seed, and the second metro seed will play the top country seed, Geelong and GWV.
I think GWV have too much talent across the board in this one.
Well, this is unbelievable, this game, when you think about the talent on the pitch, but then you look at the record, it is 0-3 in favour of Geelong. So Rebels haven't even beaten them all year, but they've got more talent. So I'm really torn because I love the Rebels. The Falcons have produced some great footy this year. They're minor premiers for a reason. I'm going to have to go Geelong. As much as I think the Rebels are the better team, record stacks up. They know how to beat them. So I think that'll play a big part. Dandy and Gippy.
Dandenong, I think. I think all of these, there's a clear team that has more skill on paper. As we saw on the weekend, that doesn't always matter. But I've gone in every game for the team that's got more skill on paper.
I think Gippy are a chance here. I think if this is like a real scrap, this almost favours Gippy.
Yeah, it does, definitely. Yep.
I'll still say Dandenong, but I'd love a close game here. So you watch the Victorian under-17 futures game on the weekend. Sadly, there was no replay of the AFLW one. So
we were both watching footy at the time.
So,
elsewhere.
You know, we wanted to rewatch it. I mean, it's a bit of a shame because, you know, I do think if it was the boys, this would be put up the next day. This is just still, I think, where we're at, that the girls isn't shown the same respect still. But hopefully it does go up in the future. We'd love to have been able to watch that. So unfortunately, we don't have anything for that this week. But you were at the Victorian under-17 futures game. I guess tell us a bit about it, because it was some of the girls who didn't get selected for the AFLW one. So still got a chance to show their skill set. And then we'll finish up with the tips for the girls' talent league.
Yeah, I think it was a really good opportunity, like you said, for girls that missed out on that national showcase to get an opportunity. Given there was a weekend off and there was a little bit of a gap in the schedule, you might as well make use of it and really capitalise on it. There were some girls that really impressed me. Zoe Vozzo, I think, is going to be a real leader of Eastern next year in the midfield. She's one that's got a lot of upside, and I think her willingness to put her head over the footy really stood out on the day, really windy conditions. Metro got the job done pretty comfortably, but Country did have some opportunities when they had the wind in their two quarters. Evelyn Connolly, I think I see her more as a forward in the long term. She can play at either end but spent some time in the back line. On Sunday, I really liked her game. Maggie Johnston played up forward. She's probably going to be GWV's best prospect alongside Jovi Skews Clinton next season and showed why with her cleverness and sort of her ability to find space inside 50. There wasn't many goals scored from a Vic Country perspective, but she scored two of them and always looked like a scoring threat or linking up when she found the ball. Josie Bamford, we watched her a couple of times at the national championships. She was the ruck for Vic Metro, and she was a class above on the day when it came to hit outs, and she was also able to impact around the ground with her physicality. Took some marks and got some hands to some balls as well. I don't know how many contested marks she would have got credited with, but it felt like if she wasn't marking it, she was at least bringing the ball to ground, which was really impressive. Rebecca Fitzpatrick is one that Gippsland's been really high on, how quickly she's developed in their system. She's been in some really strong form. If Gippsland are going to beat Dandenong this week in an upset, she'll be a big part of it. She played really well. I really liked what she did when they were able to link some ball movement together, Vic Country on the day. And Lucy Murphy just had four or five really classy moments and will be the latest in a long line of Oakley players to really impress at talent league level when her opportunity starts to become more apparent as next year.
So girls quarterfinals on both days, all at Shepley. So boys are all at Port Melbourne, girls are all at Shepley. So Metro on the Saturday, Oakley v Sandy.
I've got Oakley winning this one.
Yeah, I mean, Sandy got through as the lucky loser. So, I mean, they have been beaten by 10 goals plus against Oakley the last two games, which probably doesn't sit in their favour. I'll go Oakley, Northern v Eastern.
Eastern, but I think Northern have the capacity to really challenge.
So do I. Hope this is competitive. Hopefully Northern, they could shake things up. Imagine if they cause an upset here, but I will go Eastern on the Sunday. I'll be down at Shepley to watch these two games, Tassie v Geelong.
I've got Tassie winning this one.
So do I. I think Geelong's form hasn't been great heading into this part of the year. I just don't think they've proven it against the teams above them this year. They just have failed at that final hurdle, but they're still competitive. I'll go Tassie. And then Gippy and Dandy. The two derby games for boys and girls, that's pretty good for both clubs.
Yeah, it is pretty cool that they'll both get to face off. I've got Dandenong winning this one as well. I've just got a little bit too much class, and I think Gippy a bit reliant on Ash Central and Jazz Souden. And Alice Stoddart.
Well, it's 2 weeks in a row, and Dandy won by 10 goals in that one. So I hopefully Gippy, they'll learn some things from that week before. That's the advantage of that week, playing two games in a row. But I'll go Dandy not as well. So next week, we'll review all the quarterfinals and give our exit meeting talks as well for the girls and the boys next week. That's all for now. Check out our socials for more. If you want to see who we ranked as our top five for every boys wildcard game, that's on our Instagram. And make sure to follow for a lot more content as well. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you in the next episode.